Number 16, right away.
16. A resolution by Supervisors Sanfilippo, Rice, and Cesars, authorizing and directing the Employee Benefits Work Group to fully develop a graduated defined contribution pension plan to replace the existing defined benefit plan and to report back with a final plan for implementation. This item was referred to the committees, also to the Committee on Finance and Audit. At our September 2011 meeting cycle, this item was referred to the Employee Benefits Work Group for a follow-up report. The Committee on Finance and Audit did not address this item at their meeting yesterday.
Thank you. Mr. Langer, we know you're anxious to get back to the Windy City, so we're moving you up here.
God bless you for that. I appreciate that. In front of you should be a January 24, 2012 analysis entitled Actuary's Review of the Financial Impact of Closing the Defined Benefit Plan. If you recall, back in September, at the end of September, we put together analysis similar to this. We've updated this for two things that have occurred since the last valuation. The first bullet point in the middle of the first page is the state mandated employee pension contributions, and we have a letter on that in July 11th, 2011. The impact of that was the splitting of the contributions into the retirement system and allocating for the affected members half of it towards the members and half to the county. And the second piece is, you know, during the course of the past couple years, there have been implemented changes to the multiplier from 2% to 1.6% for various member groups as for future service, and also increasing the normal retirement age to age 64 for future hires. The latest analysis of that was sort of a cumulative analysis was the July 19th, 2011 a letter that we sent that it showed the total impact on almost all the groups. You've seen this probably, well, most of you have seen it a couple times, so I'll walk through the letter. There are two components to this analysis. I mean, the first is the component changing in the benefits and the eligibilities, shifting people into the defined contribution plan. There's two scenarios that we've done this under. The first scenario is that new hires go into the defined contribution plan. The second scenario is that all members go into the defined contribution plan at the point that this thing is, if it's ratified. So that talks to the benefit pieces, and the defined contribution plan, we should have it. The defined contribution plan was buried service-related contributions varying from 2% to 4%, or 1% to 4%. 1% for all employees up to 5 years of pensionable service, 2% between 5 and 10 years, 3% between 10 and 15, 3.5% between 15 and 20 years, and 4% for employees with between 20 and 30 years. And then if you have over 30 years, it goes to 2%. That's what we've baked into the analysis when you see the DC scenario. So that's the benefits component. The last paragraph talks to the funding policy, the recommendation of a funding policy change. When funding a retirement system, when retirement systems are closed, the recommendation is to pay off the unfunded liability of that retirement system at the point the last participant leaves, and that's a much shorter time frame than the current payment period for unfunded liabilities, which is at 30 years. What you'll see later on is that you know the contributions bunch up early on in the analysis and then level off or fall off quite quickly thereafter. But again, that's to get the retirement system funded up at the point the last membership leaves a plan or leaves employment of the county. On the top of page 2, we have impact of closing the employee's retirement system, the new contributions that result as a result of implementing the two changes that we have already reflected before, you know, the 1.6 multiplier and the normal retirement age change and the sharing of member contributions. And the thing that you'll see that's been tucked into this, not only the change in benefits has been tucked in, but item 4 is where we put in the value of future member contributions into the analysis. And the impact of this is to reduce the contributions required by the county. When you shift contributions to the membership and you lower the lower the multiplier and push back retirement, that, you know, we've gone over that before, it reduces the need for county contributions. So the funding contribution under the reflecting the changes that have happened in the past year, we have under scenario 1, which is no new employees going into the DB plan, we have an actual funding contribution of $30,992,000. Scenario two is the scenario where everyone immediately gets rolled into the DC plan. The deal with scenario 2, you'll notice that under item 3, and this should make sense intuitively, there is no future member contributions going into the DB plan, so that line item is left open. You have a funding contribution calculated by the actuary of $5.2 million. And this calculation is, as you might remember before, it's a little bit different from what we do in the routine valuation, and the difference here is, again, paying it off by the time the last active member leaves employment of the county, as opposed to using a 30-year period. The bottom of the page, we do a similar scenario for OBRA. In the interest of brevity, the county system has liabilities of over $2 billion. OBRA has liabilities of maybe $5 million, somewhere in there. The same things apply for OBRA. I'm just not going to spend much time at the pleasure of the board talking about OBRA from this point on, but the information is tucked within the analysis for your information. We've got contribution projections on exhibits 1, 2, 3, and 4. Exhibits 3 and 4 are for the OBRA, so we're going to focus on exhibits 1 and 2. And the exhibit one shows a partial portion of the analysis. It doesn't bake in the DC plan component. So it might be worthwhile, since a lot of these numbers are repeated on exhibit 2, just to jump right to exhibit 2 and cut to the chase of it. Here we have in the third column on Exhibit 2, we have a projection of contributions, employer contributions, county contributions to the plan. And you'll see that these contributions, if you remember the last valuation, I know that many of you read it repeatedly, but the contributions were somewhere around the level of about $26 million, reflecting the changes in the benefits and the impact of member contributions. At $26 million has reduced to that $15.9 million number. And we've baked in those results all the way through their projection. Now we include a 1 to 4% replacement plan based on service under the in the last 4 columns. And the projected county savings under scenario 1. And scenario 1 is you still have the current members in the DB plan, but it's closed, so the contributions pop up so you can pay off that plan by the time the last member leaves. And then you start funding up DC. You start making DC contributions for new hires that come in. And that's the contributions that result under the scenario 1 column. The impact of the implementing the DC plan, you can see contributions down at the bottom. They go from $1.8 billion over the period shown here, the 50-year period, to $1.05 billion. And there's two reasons for the decrease there. One reason is what I call financing charges. You're paying off the unfunded liability that exists there over a much shorter period of time by front-loading those contributions based upon the recommended practice of paying off those unfunded liabilities before the last current active member leaves. And the other piece is that the 1 to 4% replacement plan under the DC plan, the cost of that is somewhere around 2% or so. In the DB plan, the cost is higher than that. Under the DB plan right now, the county cost ongoing for those members that pay half of the contributions, it's somewhere in the realm of about roughly 3.5, 3.75% of pay. So you're seeing that lower contributions on half of future accruals is the other driver of keeping the contribution down. So lower benefit provided and paying off the unfunded liability quicker. That's what we're seeing under scenario one. Scenario two adds one additional piece of that. Scenario two is everyone has, they have an accrued benefit under the DB plan and you move over to the DC plan. So with scenario two, the additional savings that you see there is a result of, in the valuation, we project that many people will continue to towards retirement. We project benefits with increases in salaries and things of that nature, and to the extent, so we have like an ongoing look to it. When you remove that ongoing assumption within the valuation, and you cut off the future salary increases, you result in savings to the plan, and that's a good chunk of the additional reason of going to $1.05 billion to $776 million. And then in the column next to it, the last two columns are simply subtraction. It gives the impact. And if you look up near the top of the second to last column, you can see that there are decreases in contribution or savings in the, no, I'm sorry, increases, thank you. Yeah, increases in contribution for those first handful of years under scenario one. Again, that is funding up that unfunded liability. And then there's, but on the scenario two, where we cut off the benefit accruals, there's savings from right from the beginning. That is the end of my prepared comments. Sizable relief are welcome.
Thank you. Yep. Supervisor Caesars?
Mr. Chairman, was there some discussion about an amendment on this item, looking at the percentage on the contribution match? I hadn't seen it in the packet.
Mr. Grady.
Mr. Chairman, there was a referral at a prior meeting to the Employee Benefits Work Group to look at that, to evaluate, to study incentives for employees to participate and things like that. The work group hasn't met because we didn't have this analysis to work with, but we wanted to give you the analysis. Clearly, if that's still your wish, the work group would then take this and look at the percentages and other issues.
If I remember right, we were specifically looking at that to see if the table that was proposed in the ordinance would reflect, obviously the analysis by the actuary reflects what was in the ordinance in his report, but then we were looking at possibly seeing what adjustments, if any, on the higher end, employee with greater than 10 years, 20 years, 40 years of service, if those would cap out at a certain level instead of just keep ratcheting up. And I think if Mr. Session may add to the discussion, that was one of the reasons they were going to take a look and come back with an analysis for us.
Right. Mr. Chairman, there was an amendment that was introduced at the last time we considered this item. We never acted on it, so it still is properly before you. And it was distributed in the packet, I believe, where it strikes the last line,
right,
over 2%, and it also corrects the over 20
right.
Service credits.
Right. I'll defer now and other colleagues can finish.
Supervisor Rice.
Thank you. Mr. Langer, so let me see if I, at the risk of trying to simplify a complex report and analysis, if I look at your report and the Exhibit 2, reading this correctly, to say that migrating to a defined benefit plan over this 50-year cycle will result in savings of either 1.9 or 2.4, depending upon the scenario, $1 billion, with a net present value of between $237 and $462 million.
Yeah, I don't see those numbers.
Far right column, bottom.
Page 6.
We're going to hold it to them, too.
Exhibit 2.
Exhibit 2. I got Exhibit 2, page 5.
Mm-hmm. Page 5.
Page 6 on my printout. But
page 5 on your report.
Page 5 of my
report.
Okay. Yeah, in that, the page 5, what I have down at the bottom, the impact, if you look at the savings I show here is savings of $805 million under scenario one with a net present value of 89.5. I'm seeing back and forth nods.
The final two right columns. 805
and 1079.
1 billion.
Yeah.
This is the savings columns, and the result is down.
Maybe I've got a different document. This is Exhibit 2.
Exhibit 2, page 5, from January 24th, 2012 letter. Oh, that's
a prior report.
That's a prior report.
Okay. And so let me ask you, in preparing the report then, what was the assumption, if any, that was made in terms of the county contribution or match in towards a defined benefit plan?
The towards a DC plan. The replacement plan.
Right.
The amounts, and I read it from here. So in terms of the contributions that would be made, it's increasing amounts during the course of a person, changing amounts during the course of the member's career, 1% up to 5 years.
So that's incorporated into the analysis.
That's what's incorporated into the the DC contributions that are in there. They're combined in the 5th and 6th column on Exhibit 2. That includes the contributions for the wrapping up the DB plan, and the contributions for the DC plan are in there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And just one last question. And are these numbers sort of net of other associated expenses to change over the plan, administrative expenses to make those changes?
None of those administrative costs are baked in. These are just actuarial numbers. So the administrative costs of implementing this are not put in this analysis. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Grady.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to try to, in my layman's terms, answer Supervisor Rice's question, if I can, and Mr. Langer can correct me. But when I look at Exhibit 2, my personal takeaway from this on the bottom right corner is that changing from the defined benefit plan we have now and going to this DC plan that was in the resolution, the 1-4 back to 2% match, if I can call it that, from the employer, over a 50-year period, will result in a net present value savings of $89 million if we only go to new hires with that plan. If you go to everyone, which I would just caution raises a legal issue, the savings would be $212 million net present value over 50 years. The caveat to that is if you look at the top of the column, there's a bump up, there's an increase in pension costs for the first 4 years required in order to get to that bottom line savings. You're going to have to go up $15 million. I'm looking at the next to last column, current plan less scenario one. There's the first 4 years, you're actually going to increase your pension contributions in order to get to the end result of the savings in the long term.
Supervisor Borkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First a comment and then a question. My comment is, it makes me nervous, and I'm not in the world of actuarial science, but when you use gargantuan numbers for savings, if you don't, and once the public hears that, they expect that. So I just caution my colleagues. I understand where we're going on this, but, let's not get too crazy about the cost savings, because if this huge number isn't met or whatever, then I think we've got some other questions to deal with. And we've had that issue with a previous pension issue. So very nervous about these big numbers, because I don't know how legit they are. My question is, and this is going to be that one that has everybody, that's on everybody's mind, is, okay, we've been talking about this for over a year now, okay, and we're going to refer it again. So what kind of timeline are we talking about? What kind of, I mean, when can people expect to see some changes? Is the county executive going to do this in the 2013 budget, 2014 budget? You know, I'd like to know what kind of timeline is in our thought process here, or are we just going to keep bringing this up and just indefinitely until, you know, we finally pull the trigger?
Well,
very briefly, Mr. Chairman, this is done in response to the committee's request. This is not an initiative of the Employee Benefits Work Group. We're responding to requests. I also don't know what the county exec's position is on this at all, one way or the other. We're not doing this at the county exec's request. We're doing it at the personnel committee's request. And so the timeline is the personnel committee's timeline.
Right, and I think that it's important to point out that because we are talking some, you know, substantial issues, this thing has taken a while, but there's a lot of moving pieces here, and we want to make sure if a move is done, number one, it's done legally and it's done properly, and it's done with in the best interest of Milwaukee County, not only for the taxpayers but also for the employees. At the end of the day, we don't want to put a system in place that's going to discourage employment here at the county. So there's a lot of moving pieces, I think, that are involved in this.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. I understand that. I guess I'm asking if there's any kind of goals or deadlines or whatever. Are we talking over a three-year period or a five-year period or whatever? I guess I'm curious to know that if we're going to keep talking about this, you know, is there an end line? Is there some time that we're going to say, hey, this is what we're going to do? I mean, or is this something that is just going to keep going on?
Well, I think it's something that's going to have to be addressed sooner rather than later, because, you know, we're looking at a $55 million budget shortfall projected for 2013. Our overall structural deficit still stands at over $100 million. I mean, we're running out of ways to ratchet savings out of our operation, and so I think that this is something that'll be looked at, you know, sooner rather than later, and I'm sure that's my hope, and I'm sure it's the hope of the co-sponsors on the resolution that gets addressed. Supervisor Schmidt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of on the same wavelength as Supervisor Burkowski. I mean, the committee has asked for this, but I'm wondering, you know, looking at the work group itself, we've given the work group a lot of things to do. We've made substantial changes in the last two budgets. We've asked our employees and ourselves to take cuts, pay more for insurance, et cetera, things that needed to be done. Now this is another, and we put in the budget about $7,000, Mr. Langer, to give us all these numbers and stuff like that. I don't know where we are in that. But I think this is a large, you know, jump. And do we do it? And then we get into legality. I mean, our lawyer just told us about legalities. You know, do we do it? And you know, we got from Buck the, you know, if it's new hires, or if it's everyone, and what the differences are there. And I guess I'm on the same wavelength a little bit as Supervisor Burkowski. I mean, looking at members of the, I don't know if Mr. Hare's here today, the work group people, you know, where is this in the pecking order? I mean, this is, you know, in the resolution we're talking about that we delayed, we're talking about, and come back with a final plan for implementation. I mean, this, does the work group, you know, we see these numbers, and I always worry about looking at numbers for long-term stuff like that. We always look at savings, and unfortunately, most of them don't materialize to the extent that we think they're going to be in many areas that we've looked at. So I guess I'm throwing the general question out, too, to the work group, and we got representation of the work group here, is that, you know, are we much along now? We've got some numbers, or are we along on this path? Is this something feasible to ask to be done? You know, you said, well, sooner than later. Well, you know, what's sooner than later? Does the county executive certainly have to weigh in it? We'd have to look at the legalities of it. So to think we, you know, bring it back next month And then where are we going to be next month? I mean, this is a major change. We've gone through some major changes. Mr. Langer talked about some of the changes we made now in the last year, okay, to employee benefits and everything else we've done. I mentioned those. We're all familiar with those. Retirement age, pension multiplier, et cetera, you're all familiar with this. We've been through the budgets. This is an addition to this, another layer, very complex, okay? And I guess that's where I'm just kind of in the sea of these numbers and things like that and saying, well, what is a work group really going to do here? I mean, you are asked to do this, but is it feasible to do in a shorter period of time? Is it something we have to do in parts? I mean, let's be honest about it instead of kicking it back every month, because I don't think it's feasible, in my opinion, and I would welcome some comments that we're going to bring this next month and make some decisions here. I don't think that's feasible. I'm sorry, that's a statement, but I guess there's a question there, isn't there?
Yeah, what is it?
The question was, is it feasible to do? Is it, well, what's the work group priority here?
Mr. Chairman, I think the blunt answer is no, it's not feasible to do this next month.
No.
There are too many issues. There are. What I would tell you is now that we have the numbers, the work group can discuss this, but I see a number of issues. One is, can we do this to current employees or only future employees?
Yes, that
that's
too.
Probably going to have to go outside, because I'm a member of the system too, and so mm-hmm. go outside. We can arrange for that kind of review and get that answer. We also have to look at the issues about what should the new plan look like. You've got a structure here that you gave us of the one up to four, back to two. There's an amendment structure out there as well. And I think the charge we were given before is to look at essentially anything that we think is appropriate as a DC structure. There are other issues that we haven't even talked about. The disability benefit plan has built into it disability pensions. Typically, DC plans don't have disability pensions, and there's no mechanism for them, so we have to figure out what are we going to do with that. I just know from reading newspapers that that's what derailed a similar proposal in California several years ago, is public safety workers and lots of protests over the elimination of disability pensions. And so that's an issue we have to look at and figure out. I'm sure there's more, but so it is not an easy issue. You're talking a major sea change in a plan that has been in existence for 75 years. And so it's a big change, and I don't think it's one to be done lightly. I understand the urgency of the fiscal situation, but I don't think these kinds of changes should be done quickly. And I'm serious when you talk about it's been around for 6 months or 9 months. I don't think that's a bad thing when this kind of topic is discussed. And so rushing to judgment on changing your pension plan is not a good idea.
Thank you. Supervisor Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I fully acknowledge the complexity of the issue, but I guess the question I'd raise, you know, for the committee is there a consensus that we ought to move forward in a sensible, logical way that moves this and advances this, as opposed to wringing our hands and saying, woe is me, this is really a hard issue, and boy, oh boy, you know, it's going to take a long time. You know, the question before us is, do we want to as a policy, established that Milwaukee County ought to convert, as the vast majority of the private sector has, from our existing defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan. And if that's the case, then we direct staff and establish a timetable, and we get all the necessary legal and actuarial and financial information before us and make a reasoned decision. But to say, boy, this is a tough one, and, you know, it's been around forever, and so We're confounded by it. Is not the logical approach, Mr. Chairman. I think we set the policy here, and then we establish and direct staff to move forward with it. No, I'm not expecting that we have this done next month. But if we want to move forward, let's direct staff, or let's make a decision that no, we're comfortable with the status quo and put it to bed. I mean, I happen to favor the migration in a logical, sensible fashion over to a defined a contribution plan. Others may not, but I think that's the question before us: is at a policy level, do we want to do it? And then we deal with the details once the staff has an opportunity to properly vet it.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Lipscomb?
Yeah, couple questions. So just to make sure I understand, the difference between the two reports is that the initial report did not have the initial report did not include the analysis of the changes that we just experienced with Act 10 and the sharing the employee contributions. But it did have the previous adjustments in terms of multiplier and other things or not?
It had the adjustments for multipliers and normal retirement age to the extent that they were already baked into the January 2011 valuation. I don't have memorized what groups they were, but the biggest of the groups was asked me, and that was done after that valuation report. So there were three. I don't have groups memorized. There are a couple of groups that were baked into the January 2011 valuation, but the vast majority of the groups were baked in afterwards, and those changes were those represented changes from September to this January report.
Okay. So that change in net present value, when we compare those exhibits, that drop from 237 down to 89 million over the term evaluated is really showing you how much less valuable this change is now in relation to the current environment versus what the opportunity appeared to be to us when we first started talking about this.
Yeah. In short, there have been a lot of changes to the benefits plans that have eaten away at some of the savings that would have occurred had you gone straight from the plans that existed to this DC plan.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I guess for me, for my comment, I guess, would be that's an important distinction because it's part of sort of my evolution in my view of this concept is that initially my interest in why it supported the evaluation of the defined contribution was the idea that I thought that our plan, that we bore all the risk and that there was no sharing of that risk. Well, now with employees picking up half the actuarial value, they effectively are sharing half the risk. And so much of the savings, it's already been extracted out by the fact that the environment, that it's changed, that the terms of the plan and expectations and participation have changed. So I don't know that it's as valuable. And so then I'm left with the 89 million net present value, and I say to myself, well, where is that really? What it is, it's the diminished value of the plan that's being offered. I mean, it's the fact that you're giving a 1% to somebody who's been here 10 years, and I mean, it begins to not be very competitive in my mind. I mean, if you're going to compare it to the private sector, those who have matching plans, I don't know that this stacks up competitively. It doesn't in my mind with where I've been or other people I know who have such plans in the private sector. And so it begs the question, where is that? Where would the comparison, if we were going to continue to look at this, you've got to look at that. What is the value of the benefit that the person is getting and comparing what they would be expected to receive in the defined plan versus what they could reasonably expect to amass in the defined benefit versus the defined contribution and compare that. And that also, I guess my other question was about whether there's any evaluation of fees and costs in this, because to the extent that would also eat into their returns in comparison, I just think that cannot possibly be worth $89 million over the course of 25 years. I mean, I think we're just taking it out of what people are going to get. That's where the savings is.
50 years.
I mean, that's just—it's far less compelling to me now than it was when we first started looking at this because things have changed.
Mr. Langer, to help clarify things, can you describe for us the difference between the net present value and then the actual total contributions? Because if the plan continues, we are going to have to make these total contributions. So in reality, you're not only saving, you know, $89 million under scenario one or $200 million under scenario two. You're technically saving all those years of contributions. So we, in fact, really are saving the $800 million or the billion.
Right, but in the difference between the numbers that are shown is the total and the net present value. The total numbers, so under the current plan, the $1.856 billion, that's the actual cash outlay that you will be making over the course of those years. And it's simply summing up all the numbers in that column. The net present value is the value in today's dollars of that stream of contributions based upon discounting at the planned discount rate. The point of a net present value type of calculation is that the contributions, when you have to, when you fund up the plan faster, when we close it to new entrants and you fund it up faster, we're plopping in more contributions early on so you have finance savings. So the net present value calculation sort of gets you away from, it removes the financial savings from the analysis. So you're looking at the net dollars. In today's dollars, if you were to put in the $378.4 million that's showing there under the current plan, that presumably would be sufficient. You wouldn't have to make any contributions over the course of time, similar with the other elements that are showing there. So it's just to get rid of the financing mechanism, the financing of the dollars.
So if the plan stays as is right now and doesn't change over the course of the next 50 years that this actuarial report is done, we're going to spend $1.8 billion to fund the plan.
Yes.
And
yep.
If it's changed to scenario number two, we're going to spend $1 billion, which saves us $1 billion. Our contributions.
In terms of dollar amounts that you're contributing over that period, yep.
Right.
Yep.
So there are savings over and above. I mean, it's not fair to look just at the net present value because you don't get the ramifications of how it's going to really affect the county's budget from an operating standpoint every year as to how much money we have to fund in the plan.
Yeah, in terms of funding, it doesn't get you to what you're actually putting into the plan. The net present value, the purpose, why we commonly put this in that type of in this type of analysis is it's just that piece where you need to fund up faster, mm-hmm. It eliminates that piece out of the equation so that people say, well, I can't tell if this is cheaper or not. Over the long haul, the net present value shows you the true cost of how much cheaper it is, as opposed to the dollars do too in a different sense, because that's what you actually have to pass in your budgets. But there are two ways of looking at the issue.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Supervisor Cesar.
Mr. Chairman, I think this has been a very good discussion, and I think it should continue because the reason we started to roll up our sleeves and ask for experts' advice is to gather the information that we need. Many of our colleagues have raised excellent questions that ought to be addressed, and I think that by perhaps referring this to the work group so that they can deliver back to us the reports and a list of all the previous recommendations, such as the December item, looking for adjusting or suggestions to the actual percentages for a match. Some of the colleagues mentioned that we should take a look at what the legal ramifications might be if you chose and decided to go to scenario one versus scenario two. Those would be helpful, and I would think that perhaps referring to the work group for those specific items and perhaps one or two that I may have missed, we can look at the minutes here today. And then have that back for the next cycle so that we can continue these discussions to see whether or not we get a little bit further along.
To clarify, Supervisor, what you're requesting not is that a decision be able to be made after the next meeting, but what we would need to do in order to proceed looking at this issue.
That's
so we're
correct.
Not going to expect the work group to have the answers to all the questions in 1 month. It's just the work group come back just to say, if you want to continue to explore this idea, this is the things we need to look at. This is how we should look at it. That's what you're thinking?
Yes, and if they have results for previous items referred in previous meetings, we can get that data back and add it to the overall summary that they would focus on exactly as you stated, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Grady?
Just two quick comments. One is just a reminder, when you say next cycle is a month away, it's actually not, because of the deadlines you have. When you say next cycle, staff, and this is on any issue in front of the county board, it really means 2 or 3 weeks, just so you understand that, because that's when we have to get the report to you. And I also wanted to reiterate Supervisor Lipscomb's comment. One of the things we've talked about in the work group, and I don't know if this would require Mr. Langer's help, it probably would, is this is essentially the analysis of the change from the county's perspective. What's this going to do to the county? What Supervisor Lipscomb is asking is, what's it look like from the employee side? And the way you get at that, I think, is we've talked about looking at what does this mean for replacement or retirement income for the employee. The DB plan currently generates, on average, X amount of retirement income for an employee. What's this DC plan going to do, using certain assumptions about investment return and participation, et cetera. And so it's really the replacement value is what I refer to it as. And so because Supervisor Lipscomb does hit the point that, using round numbers, the pension plan currently costs about 8% per employee of payroll, split roughly 4 and 4 between the employee and the employer. This gives a 2% benefit to the employee, and it's obviously a lower employee. I'm not making a value judgment. I'm just saying it's obviously a lower benefit. And so that's how we get at that analysis, is the replacement value to the employee. And so that's something we could do not for next month, but we could certainly do as part of this analysis.
Yeah, and I think those are all important questions that need to be looked at. I mean, every angle has to be looked at if we're going to make this change, including the fact that switching to a DC plan actually, from a portability standpoint, could be more appealing to, you know, younger employees especially.
Yes.
And the fact that younger employees right now have no option but to contribute their 4.7% into the pension, whereas if we go to a DC plan, that could become optional for them, and that might be, you know, more important to a younger employee who has a young family starting out that maybe isn't quite as interested in swirling away for retirement as the older employees who can afford it a little bit more. So there's multiple things that need to be looked at in here.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, I read the charge to the work group is broad enough for us to sort of think outside the box, because I can tell you from things I've read, there are also what are called hybrid plans that take a little piece of both. They have a small DB guaranteed benefit and a DC layered on top of that, and it gives you a little bit of both. It gives you sort of a baseline protection for the employee who stays long-term, but it also gives you the portability of a small DC on top of that. And so, you know, it becomes more complex, obviously, but we could certainly look at that as well if no one objects.
Supervisor Rice?
Thank you. In terms of direction, I guess my suggestion would be that the analysis that we are asking for is not driven by how do we maintain as close to the status quo as possible, but rather give us some data as to what's happening in the marketplace, either nationally or regionally. What is happening with 401k plans? What is the level of participation? What is the percentage of match? All of these numbers that I think would give us better data in terms of whether this employee works here or across the street, what's the market? And so that we can make reasoned decisions so that we are competitive, but that we aren't, but we are at the same time respecting the taxpayers' ability to fund these programs, and that we've got, you know, legitimate data points upon which to make decisions, and not that we're trying to get as close to the status quo as possible, but rather let's do something that is market-based and reasonable based upon what the practices are in the real world.
Thank you, Supervisor. We have a motion by Supervisor Caesars to refer this back to the
work room.
Did you have a question, Supervisor? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, pardon, Mr. Chairman. I am interested in further exploration of the possibility of this hybrid approach between the DB and the DC that Mr. Grady mentioned a few moments ago. I think that would be worth exploring on behalf of our employees. And I also, let me briefly state that I do appreciate the comments that all of my colleagues have made here today, as well as the input from Mr. Langer and Mr. Grady. You're giving us a very good and reasonable analysis, I think. So thank you for that. But I do also wish to echo Supervisor Lipscomb's comments about the possibilities of what this would do to what the employees would receive through this. Concerns rightfully stated. I'm interested in exploring the hybrid option as a possibility for the future as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. We have a motion by Supervisor Cesars to refer this back to the Employee Benefits Work Group for the purpose of reporting back to us in the next cycle of exactly how we are to proceed, how we would proceed to further continue deliberating this idea and moving it forward. And I would encourage all the members of the committee to send Mr. Session any specific questions or things that they feel are important that need to be addressed within the next few days so that they can incorporate that into their report back to us, because that will help expedite this process along. I agree with Supervisor Rice. I don't think this is that hard of an issue to make the decision, do we want to continue to look at this and move forward? Not necessarily make the decision of what the actual plan would look like or any revisions, but we need to decide either we think this is something worth pursuing or we're not going to have the work group spend their time if we're not interested in pursuing. And for the record, I just want to point out when you look at Mr. Langer's reports, I mean, in the first 10 years, there's $146 million in contribution savings under Scenario 2. And in the first 20 years, that balloons to $400 million in savings. Now, when you're looking at the structural deficit that we are facing, significant savings like that will go a long way towards helping us balance our budget without having to do large tax increases, which are limited now by state statute, or cutting services that our residents have come to enjoy. So, after my long-winded summarization of the amendment, can we please have a vote, on the motion?
Borkowski.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Cesars.
Aye.
Rice.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to refer this item to the Employee Benefits Work Group for a follow-up report in March is approved.
Thank you very much. We'll now go back to agenda item number 1.